Strange Guests. It's the book by Brad Steiger. We'll be back with Brad in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So, Brad, so in the case of John Bell, who was poisoned, you can conclude that perhaps the Bell witch did it. These things are dangerous, aren't they?
Yes, and again, I don't suppose we can prove that, but that's certainly what we can infer from this, and that's what the family felt. They felt, and that seemed to be what the Bell witch was working for. Again, there's certain tradition that maybe when she was alive that John Bell had some dealings in which he took advantage of Kate Batts. But I maintain that Kate Batts was just the persona that the poltergeist used. And it was a handy one, and the energy was there. Now, I want to say, for those who feel, because I get a lot of email, and as soon as you had it posted, George, that I was going to be talking about poltergeists, people have been sending me their experiences, and they think they might be afflicted by one. If you go to our website, thebradandsherry.com, and click on the S-Files, we've got right there techniques, resisting negative entities, visualizing the golden light of protection, surrounding yourself with positive energy field, all of these exercises and techniques, and I assure you, they do work. We've used them for years. People have used them who have been in really volcanoes or vortexes of energy swirling around them and felt they were really about at their last legs and psychic legs, so to speak.
Literally.
These techniques work, and they're right. Just go to the S-Files on our website, and you have techniques, because the number one thing you don't want to do is show fear, because that is the strongest emotion. That's the emotion, the energy upon which they feed. That's what makes them stronger. So I urgently suggest anyone feeling that they're up against that kind of entity, go to our website and look on those techniques that we offer you.
So it senses fear, doesn't it?
But it feeds on it. It literally feeds on it. And it's very difficult, as I say, some of the situations. I didn't go out alone. I'm not trying to sound here like, you know, Spider-Man, the psychic Spider-Man going out. Good friend of mine was a former ranger in the armed services. He'd been a private detective, police officer. He would always go with me. He was, as I say, he was my best friend and went with me through so many of these cases. Now, of course, Sherry, we've handled some of these together. We supply energy to each other. Most of the cases also that I investigated earlier, we had police officers because they were the ones most often that brought us into the situation.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, they were dealing, George, with things that weren't covered in the police manual. Some had even drawn their guns, you know, because they were pushed, they were shoved, they were struck, and they couldn't see what was doing it, and even though they were being pummeled. So again, that's where we get the call so often. Police, you know, this we can't handle this. We don't know what's going on. So in those days, and I say those days because when I used to go out all the time, it seemed. Now, in my mature years, my senior years.
Your senior years. Your closeted years.
Yeah. So here again, we handle things by providing information, by writing books, by putting the information in the books. We advise many people by email. We do that all the time, and we do answer the email. It might take a while because we get a lot. But that's one thing that I recommend immediately is to go to our website, click on the S-Files, scroll down. There's lots of information, lots of articles there, but keep scrolling until you find the areas where it says protecting yourself from negative entities.
And these again,
techniques really work.
A major difference between a ghost haunting and a poltergeist haunting, right?
It's the physical aspect, yes. The physical aspect is the major difference. There is an actual touching of, and usually of a violent nature. There is a biting, a scratching, a shoving, a hitting, throwing the furniture around, and that's interesting. So many of the emails that I've been receiving since you said I'd be talking about poltergeist have dealt with people staying in hotels and motels. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, who knows? This is something, you know. I don't want to have Holiday Inn writing angry letters, but, you know, you never know who stayed in that room before you have. And people have written about, you know, lying there at night. They're tired. They're traveling. But you know, they have their full senses. They know that. And just describing violent things, you know, throwing across the room, smashing the furniture, and then going to the desk and getting very sheepish looks from the people and say, oh, you're in room? Well, we've had such reports. We've had similar. And in some cases where they'll go to the desk and the person say, ah, we've had this going on for years. What's going on? But they still put people in those rooms. You know, maybe a suicide took place in that room. Maybe there was a violent lover's quarrel. Maybe there was date rape. I mean, there could be all kinds of things that set this in motion and gave it energy, and it's still living in that room. It's still waiting for someone else from which to draw energy.
What a great movie you have just to come up with, and that would be The Various People Who Have Been in Any Specific Hotel Room. And all of them, I bet, have a story. All of them are characters. They're all different.
That'd be a good idea. It'd be The Great Movie Hotel.
Yeah, or something like that.
Only this would be Ghost Hotel, right?
And the scene is all these bizarre people who check into this same room. And that would be interesting. Like, well, maybe you can just call it like room, you know, 609 or something.
Yeah,
like that
would be good because, you know, in the old, we have many, now that you mentioned that, nearly every hotel has a room. And when we have the classic hotels, in my book, Real Ghosts, Restless Spirits, I have a whole chapter on different hotels in the various rooms where, you know, you may not be happy you stayed there. And years ago, I had, you know, sitting around talking late one night in a hotel in New York. He was telling me that they had a suicide room. I said, I beg your pardon. I said, and he said, no, not the way it sounds. He says, but we have this one room where years ago someone committed suicide. And he said, you know, I hate to tell you, but we've had a repeated number of suicides in that same room. And I got to thinking, George, and this kind of gives me a creepy feeling. You know, what if, okay, someone commits suicide because they're terribly depressed. So you check into that room. Now someone else then, oh, man, the job isn't going so well. I hate my work, and I'm having a little trouble at home. My wife complains I'm on the road too much. He's kind of depressed. He enters that room where the suicide took place. And
anything could happen to him.
Yeah. But he went on to say, and this is kind of, well, no, it's not straying from the subject at all. This really sounds gruesome, but, you know, they came to expect every so often that there would be a body on the sidewalk, because in this particular house, they had all committed suicide by jumping out the window.
God.
And that's haunted me. I was probably 30 years old when that was told to me, and that's haunted me ever since. you know, that there could be a room you don't know. I mean, you that's why, you know, keep your sunny side up, folks. Always have a positive attitude. Surround yourself with the golden light of protection. Surround yourself. Keep your guard up. Keep your psychic guard up.
I'm going to have you tell us some stories of some poltergeists from your book, Strange Guests. But have poltergeists in the past attempted to take over bodies, humans, possession?
That's my feeling. I feel that in some poltergeist cases, that's the objective, that's the goal, is possession. And I deal with a number of those. And you know, we've indicated before, I told you, you know, that in the average poltergeist phenomena, maybe 2 weeks and the energy is expended. And again, I can't say that with great authority. I'm just offering it as opinion from my experience.
Without anyone doing anything, you're saying?
Yeah, without anyone doing anything, but especially if maybe a counselor was brought in, you know, and talked to the young person. What's bothering you? What's really troubling you? In this one case, I mean, classic. It was so simple. The boy tended to the arts. He didn't want to go out and play football the way his dad insisted he did. I mean, and it's that simple. And I advise, you know, just the school counselor to work with him. I advise the father, as much as he opposed it, you know, that there was life beyond football. And, you know, that his son tended to have other interests. So it was that simple in that case. But there are the more dramatic cases when I think possession is the goal. That's the goal of whatever it is, and it's not the same type of mechanism. That's why the poltergeist is so, as we rightly put on the marquee for this program, the most bizarre phenomenon in psychical research, because it combines so many things, including the perverse or the dark side of the human psyche. The perverse side of the human psyche comes into play, and generally the agent of the haunting is not aware that the dark side is being plundered, and an entity then can come in and take control. Now, especially if alcohol is involved, drugs involved, or again, if sexual indiscrimination, people become habitually oriented to sex and certain sexual practices, which makes the psyche, makes the individual vulnerable. All of these things.
That's bizarre, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I have a chapter. I have a chapter in one book called Haunted Honeymoons. And I was thinking of writing an entire book called Haunted Honeymoon because of all the stories people have told me of poltergeist phenomena on their honeymoon.
Heck, Brad, I didn't think they had anything to do with ghosts and poltergeists, just a bad relationship, but I guess not, huh?
No, I mean, one of the most dramatic demonstrations of the poltergeist is pyrokinetic, bursting into flame. And, you know, I know it sounds like, you know, a poor joke, but people, again, after their honeymoons have told me how, you know, the bedclothes burst into flame. And, of course, I know that that's an opening for all kinds of honeymoon-type jokes. But, I mean, they were serious. You know, spontaneous combustion, pyrokinetics. I have many cases in the book where that eventually, think of that, you know, the power of the human psyche to cause objects to burst into flame. That's as dramatic in psychokinesis as you can get, I think.
I noticed that our buddy Lauren Coleman writes the foreword to your book.
He did indeed, my buddy Lauren Coleman.
Super guy, by the way.
Oh, very much so, very much so.
Is he into these? I know he's a great cryptozoologist.
He is a cryptozoologist. His particular interest does not lie so much in this area. He became intrigued because... Ivan Sanderson was a mentor to me. Ivan Sanderson was a mentor to Lauren. And the fact that this book was written because of the inspiration and the guidance of Ivan T. Sanderson. Lauren, who's been a friend of mine for, oh my goodness, 30 years or so, said, you know, we've got to get that book back in print. I mean, we absolutely have to. Then he contacted another good friend, Patrick Ouija at Anomalist, and Patrick says, I want to do it. We're going to get that book out. And Ivan, of course, the original foreword by Ivan T. Sanderson, is in the book, and Lauren's foreword has been added. And then I've written an afterword, how this book came to be from my aspect and my perspective.
Well, have you ever been scared almost to death, Brad, from one of these cases?
I will admit, not to death, but certainly, as I said, that's why I always had a trusted group with me.
For your own protection?
Absolutely. My own psychic protection. I mean, let's face it. If you're alone and you're confronting these things, I mean, I'll admit right out, okay, I'm experienced. I have, as I said, I've had these experiences. I learned as a child, after so long, that the entities that would materialize in my room, since all they did was look at me, I came to accept they aren't going to hurt me.
So I went
out with that attitude as a psychic investigator.
Is that how you fought possession?
I don't think, at least I don't feel that that has ever been a threat in my case, because, yeah, maybe the acceptance of it, the near-death experience. I think the people who are in greatest danger, George, are those who have a rigid attitude and don't accept any of this. I think of the police officers that, as I said, many police officers brought us into the case, and then perhaps they had to go on duty that night, and one of their friends, because we had to have, in some cases, we had to have a police officer with us for many reasons, who did not believe and was only, he didn't know what the heck he was doing, but he was just helping a friend. I've seen a couple police officers, I mean, come very close to losing it because they couldn't handle what they saw.
Who would blame them? Does anybody have any recording, and I'm not talking about EVP sounds, but recording of some interview with a poltergeist or some lengthy discussion?
We only tried to do that once, and the tape only had weird screeching on it. That's the only time that I was involved where there was vocalization.
Interesting. See, the tape was magnetic, and I wonder if this poltergeist has so much energy.
Yeah.
It did something to the recorder.
Yeah, now maybe they have more sophisticated tape recorders. This was some years ago. The majority of cases I've been involved in have been, you know, objects moving around the room, throwing around the room, flying through the air. One interesting case, this teenage girl really learned how to work it. Her mother would say, no, clean up your room before you go to school. Well, she'd clean it up, right, and it would be thrown all over the place when she got back. So she didn't make her bed. She didn't clean up her room. When she came home from school, the poltergeist had straightened it all up for her.
So interesting. A little reverse psychology,
yeah,
there, huh?
I thought there was one clever young lady, but I also suspect very much that she was an unconscious. I don't know. I think maybe I'll retract that. I think this was a situation where the house was haunted. I mean, it was truly
not a
haunted.
Not a poltergeist.
No, several a murder, a violent murder. A man had killed his wife and his child.
Oh, God.
While his lover looked on, and you could actually, the scene would actually play itself out. I mean, you could.
Over and over again.
Yeah, over and over again, and was driving the occupants nearly out of their minds.
Brad, let's talk about some specific stories and strange guests. In the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to talk with Brad Steiger. Well, people are basically inhaling the double CD offer with an After Dark newsletter subscription. We have for you two CDs, two separate shows of an Art Bell series of interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin. They are old classics that we have. We're giving them to you for a slight shipping and handling fee. That is it. But you have to subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. So to subscribe, call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online, coasttocoastam.com. Take advantage of this offer. A double CD, two powerful shows, Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin. Beyond what we're talking about tonight, Brad, what does it tell you about the universe with the fact that these poltergeist entities exist?
I think what it tells me is that we don't know too much about the true nature of the universe. We see definitely through a glass darkly. That I'm, the longer I'm research, the more I'm convinced is that what we're talking about really are other dimensions of reality and entities that exist, enter our dimension with various motives. Some have this strange interest in helping us and benevolent. Others seem to want to, I'm not saying they want to hurt us in terms of stealing our souls, but they want to exploit us. They want to use us for their own nefarious purposes. They want to possess and to feel what it's like to be human. And I just think we have an entire range of entities in the unseen world. And I don't think it's simple. I think it is extremely complex. I think we are learning slowly more that there are alternate dimensions, alternate universes. And I think, you know, when I sit down and talk with physics professors, and there seems to be kind of an understanding there of what I'm talking about and others are talking about, is that we really haven't clearly defined reality. No, what reality is, what the entire spectrum of reality is, both in terms of sight and sound and sensing. It's just an incredible universe, and I think the human entity is a marvelous vehicle, a marvelous conduit for wonderful, powerful energies, but also we have the choice to use it for the dark force and evil. And I think the true evil exists in us, but we can be manipulated by negative entities, by perverse entities. I don't call them demons anymore, though I use that so people know what I'm talking about. I call them spiritual parasites that can actually latch on to the soul and suck the energy and manipulate and possess. So I think there are many things between heaven and hell.
Well, your cover is strange. It's kind of scary. Tell me about it.
Well, Sherry says it's too scary. But
she might be right, though.
See, what I'm trying to demonstrate there, or what we're trying to show on the cover, is we see this, you know, the little droplets of liquid. Now, the liquid in water, of course, is the universal symbol of the unconscious. And I see that latent, to me, it's almost like some spiritual fetus being born there and taking life and taking form and blending with the human unconscious with this unknown energy. We'll just have to say unknown energy in creating the poltergeist. So I think it's a perfect cover. It has all that symbol. To me, it has all that symbolism going for it.
Yeah, it does. Let's pick some strange stories out of the book. Your choice.
One of my favorites, my all-time favorites, besides The Bell Witch and Castle of Calvados, is Jeff the Magic Mongoose.
Jeff the Magic Mongoose?
On the Isle of Man. And this is such an extraordinary case. A animal that began speaking to this family and chanting first again now. We do first the scratching with thumpings, and then the little sucking sounds like something being born, and then little nursery rhymes begin to be repeated, and the voice sounded, and you could see it coming from this hole. What was it? If you'd look in there, there was kind of a weasel, and it would, you know, it was actually communicating. And then it said that it was a mongoose. And, well, here we are in the Isle of Man, and, of course, that's off the coast of Great Britain, so where would a mongoose come from? Well, then they found out that someone in the area had been to India and claimed to have taken a mongoose back with him. Well, I don't think it was a mongoose. I think here, again, it was an entity that had possessed some weasel-like animal. And this is an extraordinary story because it did... if you've had cats, you probably have had them bring you a mouse or something.
Well, I'm a dog person, yet I've seen people who own cats, friends of mine, and you're right. You know, they'll bring you a mouse or a bird or something. And,
right,
you know,
right.
Yuck.
Yeah. But when we had our granddaughters and we had extra company, the mother cat, coincidentally, brought a weasel and had it laying for us because she was seeing that we had extra company, so maybe we needed some help feeding them. Cats will do that. So this would do that. It would bring them birds. It would bring them rabbits and so forth that it had killed. And it would speak in different Hindi dialects. It would speak in the accent of the area. It said, "If you could see what I really look like, you would go mad. You would be terrified." This was investigated. The London Times, everyone came. They all tried to take pictures of it. They all communicated with it. They all talked to it. Whatever was in this hole could communicate, could talk to them. And I saw this dramatized. They changed everything. They put it, I think, in Kentucky or someplace. On the old series, One Step Beyond.
Oh, what a great series that
was. Oh, I loved it. And I had a chance to interview John Newland when Sherry and I did the book Hollywood and the Supernatural, and I have an interview with him there.
I don't think he's not alive now, is he?
I don't think so. We interviewed him probably, oh, goodness, it's probably over 10 years ago now. But certainly he and he would say, "To whom this happened, you know, we know why it happened, we don't," so forth, that marvelous wrap-up that he'd given the theme music. I love the theme music, too. But they did a dramatization of this, and they made it a little girl in Kentucky with a raccoon or something that would speak. But the actual case, because it shows that whatever this energy is, it can also, you mentioned possession, it can possess animals, or it can take the form of animals. Very often, traditionally, the black dog is the favorite. The black dog would be a very favorite. And then kind of an indeterminate kind of, you don't really know what it is. We have the familiar of the cat, but really not the poltergeist using this. It needs kind of a more forceful animal. So Jeff the Magic Mongoose has always been one of my favorites because it's the most unusual pet that any little girl could ever have. And it finally then just disappeared. And then strangely enough, years later, someone actually did shoot a mongoose on the Isle of Man. So is it possible? Nah, we know that the mongoose does not develop speech. But again, the poltergeist phenomena, all the the elements, the wraps and the stones throwing and everything else that we associate with the poltergeist was somehow personified in this strange, mysterious animal.
That's something unbelievable. Yeah, the one step beyond the number of different episodes in this particular one. What questions you want? Because I'm on a website right now that has this. Did you have a one step beyond question, Brad?
No.
You did not? Okay. All right. Because it started in 1959, by the way. So that would have made us little tykes, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I of course, was in my second year of teaching already by then. So.
Really?
Yeah. I'm getting up there, my friend. I'm getting up there. I also wanted to mention in the Bell Witch that a group, great. It's on a DVD, and it sounds strange, but Willing Hearts Productions. Willing Hearts Productions. Did a DVD of the Bell Witch Haunting, which is totally accurate, authentic. They did a superb job. My friends Rick and Linda sent this to me. I watched it. I was astonished. They did. It couldn't have been better. It's just if you are living through the horror of the Bell Witch right along with the Bell family. So that's available on DVD. The current movie, An American Haunting, I'm sorry, you know, it just alters so much of the story that it, for me, it was ruined. Even though I love Sissy Spacek and as an actor, and sure. Donald Sutherland cannot be beat, but the story betrayed them.
By the way, John Newland is dead. He died in 2000.
2000.
Yep, he had a stroke, died in Los Angeles, as a matter of fact. He was 83 years old when he died.
I'm so pleased that I had that opportunity to talk to him then, because I was such a fan of that program. I think it's the finest television done on the paranormal, I think. There has been X-Files, we all love, it was great. Yeah. But in terms of actually capturing the true phenomena, I think one step beyond this has not been equaled.
I think so. I don't think Twilight Zone is in the same category.
No, Twilight
Zone by itself is phenomenal.
But of course.
But it wasn't really paranormal. It
was more
social, believe it or not.
Yeah, no, that of course, but as you say, it's in a class. But to just actually do the paranormal, the psychic phenomena, ESP, it's one step beyond.
These stories that we have in the book, how do they come to you? People who just approached you?
This was research, my friend, and this was, I was young and enthusiastic, had all kinds of energy. I actually interviewed everyone I could.
Every one of these?
No. Because some are, okay. But all the current ones, ones.
That's a lot of work.
And for 1966, I had well over $1,000 a month phone bill. So you can imagine. But, I mean, whether it was a newspaper office in San Francisco or, a haunting, if ever I heard about it, I picked up the phone or I drove and I talked to the people. And as I said, it's all authentic interviews. That's why people cherish it. So, and I got to meet, they were just grad students then, Arthur Hastings and Stanley Krippner. And developed, you know, a lifelong correspondence with those fine gentlemen. I was teaching at the time, and they were graduate. I mean, I was teaching high school, and they were graduate students in college getting their PhDs. And they investigated a poltergeist phenomena in Millville, Iowa. So you see, that was pretty close to me. And that made a lot of papers, and I established connection then with what has become a long-time association of research with those fine researchers. The other cases, just heavy research. Ivan Sanderson had collected enormous files. I think he had seriously considered writing the book himself and then got involved with all kinds of things. You remember he was well, I shouldn't say, do you remember when he was on the Gary Moore program? He would be like the fellows who come on Leno and Dave now with
Letterman,
animals.
Sure, yes.
Well, Ivan was the first one who would come on with different animals and so forth on Gary Moore's program. And, of course, many people out there will remember Gary Moore. Others will say, who the heck are we talking about? But in the early days of television, Ivan was the zoologist. He was the popular zoologist. And I think that he wanted to write this book himself, but he bequeathed it to me and gave me, I visited his farm in New Jersey. And he opened up his files to me, and then, of course, I was collecting my own. I was writing a column at the time, a weekly column, and that's how he contacted me and said that he felt I was the one to carry on and do this. As far as we know, you know, first major book on the poltergeist phenomena. This is entirely poltergeist and hauntings and what have become now famous cases, Borley Rectory, the most haunted house in England. By some strange series of events, George, I inherited so much of the research from there. I actually had...
That's priceless.
I inherited the rubbings that they made from when the poltergeist wrote on the wall, "Get help, Marianne. Help me, Marianne." It actually... the rubbings. I inherited those. I mean, boy, if that doesn't give you a strange feeling.
Do you think it wanted help, or was it just playing with her?
I think it was playing with him.
Yeah.
I think it was playing with him. And then the nun, the phantom nun, an oil painting. They sent me an oil painting of that. Harry Price was the researcher on that. And I was given so many, just a sheaf of his original notes and so forth. With so many cases, so that's been very rewarding over the years to actually acquire artifacts from so many of these famous hauntings.
Any stories of Ouija boards and poltergeists?
Oh, don't get me started on that. I just got a long letter from someone saying, my daughter for Halloween wants to have a big Ouija board party. What do you say? And I say...
Oh, tell her the truth, Brad. Just lay it out there for her.
Forget it. The Ouija board, I mean, okay. Some psychics are going to write in and say, I use it, I study. Fine. If you study, if you are prepared, if you have learned discretion. But if you are 12 or 13 years old, after the football game and the slumber party on Friday night, that's not where you take out the Ouija board. It is not to be used. Parker Brothers have it as a game. It's not a game. This is a serious... And, of course, the Ouija board itself isn't evil, but it opens the door. It can open the door to all those tender, young, fertile psyches. Of the young girls or the young boys who are working with them. I know one instance, and it's not an exaggeration, a woman in the 60s, the young girls and guys were playing with a Ouija in Wisconsin. That woman has been institutionalized ever since.
Played with her brain.
It played with her brain. It took possession. It took over. She has been in and out. She was in institutions for like 20 years. She's been in and out since from Ouija board. And people say, I'll be careful. No, it opens up the door. It opens up the door to things you're not ready. I remember when I had an office in a college town. And, of course, I've always been a night owl. I guess people knew that. And I'm working late at night, and boom, boom, boom on my door. And here are six co-eds going out of their skulls because they were conducting research. They were conducting research.
And well, stick with us. Hold on, Brad. We're going to be right back. We're going to take phone calls next with you because what you're about to see is a matter of human record. Explain it, we cannot. Disprove it, we cannot. We simply invite you to explore with us the amazing world of the unknown, to take that one step beyond.